Only a handful of sympathizers were present at Mama Kuku's burial. Not even her relatives were there. They had disowned her right from the day she decided to marry the man who was my Papa Kuku, who died many years before my birth. But curiously, my mother was absent. Conspicuously absent. I, the only grandchild present, the unwanted child in Icha village, was the chief mourner. My childhood friend, Tochi, was by my side, and he mourned with me. The coffin looked like the bark of an old Iroko tree beaten by harsh weather. As it lay in the shallow grave, it reminded me of three things I hold dear. The first was Mama Kuku herself. Before her death, she looked so frail with bony limbs and sunken eyes. The second was our mud house. Few people in Icha had to live in buildings like that. The third was Icha Primary School, IPS, which I attended. Its mud wall had fallen when I was in Form 3. I had stopped at Form 5 because Mama Kuku could not raise money for my tuition and other fees. Even at the inevitability of approaching death, Mama Kuku still hoped that one day I would grow up to become rich.
"Then you, DK, will rebuild that school," she always said. "You will teach these government people how they should spend government money."
The priest stood at a respectable distance from the open grave. He raised the crucifix towards it, turned and looked at me. I felt that his look, like those of many Icha people, was condescending. Of course, Mama Kuku could not pay her monthly dues at the women's wing of the church. Most of the church members were not happy about this. I approached the grave, scooped the red earth, and looked at the coffin for the last time. Aja lana aja, ntu lana ntu, dust to dust. She is gone, Mama Kuku. But to whom and to where do I go?
"Come to our house for the night," Tochi said.
"But Tochi, you don't understand," I responded. "Your people will throw me out. Ija people say I am an osu, an outcast. That is why my Mama Kuku's people disowned her, for marrying an osu. Papa Kuku's relatives avoid us like a plague." "Don't talk like this, DK. You are a man, are you not?"
"And that is the problem, Tochi. A man whose father is unknown, Anobara Ojo, bad blood, born out of wedlock in the town. A man brought to Icha land by an only daughter who should have behaved more responsibly. A man whose mother cannot inherit anything in her father's house. She is only a female, Tochi."
"Listen, DK," said Tochi. "At 14, you are no longer a child. Be a man." My three uncles sat at a reasonable distance from Mama Kuku's hut. I sat by the door of the hut and listened. Decisions had already been made and were being announced to me.
"You do not belong here," they told me. "So do not waste time trying to locate your father. We know a woman who can help you to find your mother. Your mother has been away for too long. If she wanted to help you, she would have come if she cared."
Tears were in my eyes. "Why don't you pity me? Am I not your own flesh and blood? Why am I not allowed to mourn Mama Kuku?"
"Shut up your mouth, idiot,"
my youngest uncle roared.
"Now listen. This thatched house shall be cleared tomorrow so that my sons, the true heirs of this compound, will acquire it. Did you get that?"
I nodded to myself. Tochi was right. I should be a man. I alighted from the bus I boarded in Icha. Buses sped past as I stood by the road and clutched Mama Kuku's old bag. Most of the bus conductors hung dangerously but bravely by the doors, screaming the names of their destinations.
"Emene, Emene, Emene, Old Park, Old Park."
Many of them were boys underage. I strained my ear to hear them mention my destination. I was sure the woman my uncles referred me to mentioned Main House bus stop.
a man pushing a wheelbarrow who wore only faded short jeans and pushed sacks of garri nearly rammed into me.
"Stupid boy," he cursed.
On a second thought, he stopped and asked,
"What are you looking at?"
Sorry, I stammered. "I am going to main house bus stop." He frowned and stood still. Then he pulled his load aside and approached me, sweat running down his bare skin.
"That should be mainland," he said. "You must be Johnny Just Come." JJC.
He suddenly smiled, showing his yellow teeth.
"Boy, you should watch it, okay?"
I nodded, expecting him to leave, but he did not. He waved down the next bus and told the driver that I would alight at mainland bus stop. I thanked him as I hopped on. It took less than 7 minutes. The sitting room smelled of rich perfume. There was also an aroma of boiling meat and onion which drew a rumble from my stomach. 3 children, 2 boys and a girl, all below 10 years of age, sat on the sofas and watched TV. Only the biggest boy, who had opened the door to let me in, actually looked at me with a frown before he returned to his seat. I knew I sweated because of anxiety and looked unkempt. Then a stern-looking man appeared at the doorway wearing a grey t-shirt and green shorts. His eyes narrowed as he ignored my greeting and asked, "Who are you?" "I am DK, sir," I responded. His eyes widened.
"You are who? What are you doing here?"
A young lady clad in apron and a scarf came out from the kitchen door. She was wiping her hands on a white towel. She appeared worried when she looked at the stern man. When she turned and faced me, I knew she was not my mother. She could have been 20 or a little more.
"What are you doing here?"
The stern man's anger shot my lips. "It's okay, uncle," the young lady said. "Let me handle this."
"You better do that. He should leave this house at once. Leave!"
The young lady is kind. She walks with me down the road. The stern man is her uncle and my mother's husband, she tells me. Those children are my half-brothers and half-sister. My mother and her husband may soon separate. They have been living like cat and dog in recent times. Each time my mother is battered, she is taken to an unknown hospital for treatment. Right now, she is recuperating somewhere. She really wants this marriage to work. That is partly why she stayed away from Icha, in obedience to her husband's demands. "I am fed up with my uncle's bullying," she sighs. "But don't worry, I can help you."
"Help me do what?"
"Find your father. Your mother told me everything. You should be strong. The news is not good." She looks concerned. "He was, and I believe, is still rich. He has only 2 little daughters who are living with HIV. His wife died of AIDS 2 months ago. They were diagnosed with the ailment very late. I understand he longs to see his son before he dies. Where is he? I am anxious to know more." The building is magnificent. Everyone hugs me. They keep saying, "He looks like him." My half-sisters are brought to me. They are 5 and 3 years of age. I hold them. I carry them. We are taken to him, our father. He sees me and smiles. I see myself in his lean face as I approach his bed. He holds me so tight, so close to his bony chest. His skinny arms remind me of Mama Kuku. I feel him moan and hear him whisper,
"I know you won't make the mistakes I made, my son. Please forgive me."
"It's okay, Papa. It's okay," I whispered. There are tears in many eyes except mine. I feel a heavy lump in my throat and my chest tightening. But I am thinking of what Tochi would say. "You should be a man." The hands that hold me suddenly go limp and slide away from me. There is love, there is compassion, and there is sorrow everywhere. I see these in the faces of the fighters against HIV and AIDS, FAHA, who are among the crowd. I see them too in the face of the priest who hands me a shovel. As I scoop the red earth, I wish Tochi was here with me. Aja lana aja, ntu lana ntu, dust to dust. Again, Mama Kuku comes to my mind. I think of what she dreamt I will become and what I will be. The fight has just begun.